Confetti.
Hello, you're listening to Confetti, the wedding planning business talk show. My name is Debbie. Thank you for joining me. Today is Tuesday, March 6, 2012, and I have a great show lined up for you today. If you or someone you love is passionate about planning weddings, then you are in the right place. Confetti is here to bring you information and answers to your questions about what it takes to start and run a successful wedding planning company of your own. This show is broadcast live every other Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern. To get show updates and much more, please visit the free online resource, weddingsforaliving.com. And there you'll find ideas and inspiration about launching a wedding planning business of your own. That's also the place where you can listen to and download archived episodes of this talk show. And for much more detailed wedding business startup help, please visit weddingbusinessguide.com. And there you'll find tutorials, downloadable forms, and access to live teleseminars and webinars just for wedding planners, okay? Today's show is completely interactive. If you have a question or a comment that you'd like to share with us tonight, please feel free to call in live by dialing 626-213-5678. And you can also use the Skype button, which is at the top of the show page, and you can use that to call in. To speak with me or our guest host, who I will introduce in just a moment, simply press the number 1, and that will let me know that you have something to share with us, and then we'll bring you on live. You can also type your questions and your comments in the online chat room, and you can find the chat room by scrolling all the way down to the bottom of the show page at blogtalkradio.com/confetti. In order to actively participate in the Confetti chat room, you must have a Blog Talk Radio account, either a listener account or somebody that hosts your own show. To register for your listener account, just click on the sign up button, and that's at the top of the Confetti show page, okay? If you're not checking email, please follow me on Twitter. And I still cannot say that with a straight face because I'm just so pitiful. I'm so Twitterful. But that way you'll get updates as to when the show is about to go live. And the Twitter handle is my name, Debbie, D-E-B-B-I-E, Tobias, T-O-B like boy, I-A-S. Okay. Please post your Facebook URL if you are in the chat. I see several of you are there. Wonderful. And I'm going to take a peek at it in just a moment to see where everyone is located. Post your Facebook URL, and why not post your state and your country, depending on where you are, so that we can tell where everyone's located. Also, please follow the show on Blog Talk Radio. And add your comments on the show page. And of course, share the resource with someone else that you think might benefit from some of the information that we talk about. If you have a success to share about your progress that you're making in your world as it relates to your wedding business, please let us know about that. Just shoot me an email. If you go on weddingsforaliving.com, you'll see a contact form there. And this way I can share it with the rest of our community. It's a really great way to get some exposure, and it's good inspiration for the rest of us that are sort of on the fence about the things that we need to do. And speaking of success stories, I want to mention Donna Snyder is hosting her own Bridal 411 event on April the 7th. And Donna's in sort of my neck of the woods. She's in Towson, Maryland. And I believe the event's being hosted at the Towson University Marriott on April 7th. I think that's Easter weekend in Maryland. So kudos to you, Donna. Donna, you are doing something that a lot of us talk about doing but don't actually move forward. So, you know, plans are good, actions are much better. So congratulations to Donna, and hopefully we'll hear some more feedback as to how her show goes. It's quite possible for you to host your own event. It doesn't have to be the big, massive, you know, bridal event that has tons and tons of people, tons and tons of vendors and brides and grooms and whomever coming. You can do this on your scale, in your specialty, in your area. And Donna Snyder has proven that to us. Okay. All right. So let's get back to today's show. Let me take a look over at the chat. And as many of you know, my multitasking skills are not always the best. And I see quite a few of you are here. Wonderful. Let's see. for the benefit of those, for those of you that are on the phone, we've got folks, Waldorf, Maryland, wonderful. Is that Nolensville, Tennessee, Cleveland, Ohio, Sydney, Australia, wow. And Daniel is in Cornwall, England. Hello, Daniel. Good to see you guys here. So just post where you're located in the chat and we can get a feel for how global we really are. Okay, so tonight's show, I gave it the title, Five Ways to Attract Brides to Your Wedding Business Website. Because, listen, it's 2012, and if you're in business, people are expecting you to have some sort of online presence. And many of us do. So once you get over the fact and you understand that you need a website, the next thing is, you know, how do you make sure that people find your website outside of you presenting, you know, your website, your URL, your address to someone? Someone has to find you if they don't know that you exist, because that's what we're doing, right? We're running a business in the hopes of getting prospects, meeting prospects that we hopefully change over, transition into clients. So our guest co-host for today's show is Brian Lawrence. And Brian has been in the wedding industry for over 30 years as a multi-store retailer and then VP of Sales and Marketing for a national invitation brand. He is the author of The Wedding Expert's Guide and is speaking for the third time this year at Wedding MBA. His company, Local Traffic Builder, is a nationally recognized web design and marketing company that serves the wedding industry. Perfect, right? Brian, I'm going to bring you on the line here. 1 second. Okay, there we go. Brian, are you there?
I certainly am.
Oh, wonderful.
Hello, everybody across the country and the world.
Wonderful. Thank you for being here, Brian. As I mentioned, Brian is old hat, excuse the term, in our industry. And I'll tell you, I haven't met Brian face-to-face, but years ago, I ordered it's the Wedding Expert's Guide, right, Brian? That was the...
Yes, the Wedding Expert's Guide to Sales and Marketing.
Sales and Marketing. And you know how when you see something that you realize and you read the sales copy and you say, okay, this is perfect. This is what I need. It's going to help me with my business, whatever it is you're doing. For me, it was, you know, as a wedding planner. And then you get the product and you're sort of like, oh, okay. It was kind of, you know, it was kind of general. It was a little helpful, but, you know, underwhelmed. Brian's product was the complete reverse for me. It actually had some concrete information and some actual specifics, which is what you're looking for. And I find that to be very rare in our industry. You know, lots of people talk about the general stuff, but Brian has been there, done that. And that Wedding Expert's Guide was really an eye-opener for me. I remember I was a little hesitant, and I looked at the dollar amount. I'm like, I'm not sure, but it was worth every penny. He certainly over-delivered. So, needless to say, Brian knows exactly what it is that he's talking about. Okay, so Brian, let's see. Tonight's show is about websites. So, I mean, what can you tell us? Where should we start? I mean, we know it's important to have a website. We know that, you know, folks may excuse you not having a business card, but they're probably not going to excuse the fact that you don't have a website. Would you agree?
Yes, and there has to be a realization that your website is like the front lobby to your business.
Okay.
Even, no matter what type of marketing that you do, whether it's print advertising or online advertising, it used to be that you can advertise in a magazine or in the Yellow Pages and people would pick up the phone and call. But now the website is really the gateway between a customer knowing that there's a lot of information that they can garner from the right type of website to really make an intelligent decision to take the next step. So it's really, really important to think about the intention behind your website. And for most of the listeners, I'm going to assume that's to get the bride to make an appointment. So it would be great if every customer, every bride that came to your website, you'd have the opportunity to talk to, but you can't. So the idea is that in every way possible, in the words that you choose, in the images that you share, that your website speaks for you. So it's becoming a really vital aspect of the success story of just about every wedding professional.
Okay. And yeah, I agree 100%. So when someone looks at your website, they should be getting an idea of the kind of planner you are, your style, without you having to say a whole lot, right? It should be evident based on how that website looks.
Yes, and it's also very important to brand your locality? Because unless you're a destination wedding planner, if you're covering an area, you want it to be very clear that the bride that's coming to your site is that she knows that you are local to her. And also, if you happen to have a physical location, showing the physicality of your location is beneficial as well, because it helps the bride to superimpose herself with you. So, and it doesn't even, you don't even have to have a storefront. If you have an office that is a professional setting, and you just show a photograph of that office, that adds authenticity to your business.
Oh, now that's something I never thought of, because I know a lot of planners operate from their home. So you're saying a sort of way to add credibility and is to just maybe take a picture of your home office? That would do?
Right. You don't need to show the picture of the outside of your home, but you just show the environment that these people are going to be in. I mean, your website is the opportunity to really level the playing field that a home-based business used to be at a disadvantage to a store. If you show a comfortable environment that someone could look forward to visiting, once they call you, then you could give them directions, or if it's not a physical location, they can just drive to. And on your website, if it's by appointment only, you certainly want to make that very clear.
Okay. So what would you suggest to the wedding planner who operates from home but doesn't want to meet her clients and prospects at her home, but will go to another location, either their location or some sort of neutral spot? What would you recommend in that instance?
Well, I don't think that's the type that you'd want to express that vividly on the website, but you really would not show a photograph of the physical location that you're going to meet with them in. But what you'd be doing is showing the benefits of why they should contact you, and then you could, once you speak to them and you get to know them a little bit, you could say that show the benefit of meeting at a neutral setting, or a lot of times maybe just going to their home.
Okay.
It's very interesting. I mean, there's a lot of things that have changed in this industry over the last number of years. It used to be that, you go back to the 1980s, that brides were always an identifiable audience, so you can do a bridal show or find ways to get leads. But you used to be able to get those leads and pick up the phone and call the bride.
Okay.
Now, I mean, that's almost impossible, and sometimes it's even a turnoff. So the idea is that when you're able to speak to the bride and you're able to make an appointment, and you're able to actually make an appointment to go to someone's home, if it's something that you're comfortable with, just think about the logistics of going to someone's home. You're sitting in someone's home. Their innate desire to please you, to make you comfortable, to show hospitality is going to manifest. They're going to treat you like a guest. Most people will. So if you interact and accept their hospitality, really get comfortable with them and get to know them, you'll get to know them beyond often what you would typically have experienced in an office setting.
Okay.
So sometimes, going to someone's home, if that's possible, is a great advantage, because they're not going to get up and leave.
Right.
So they're comfortable. If they know that if they need to go to the bathroom, they can excuse themselves. They could make themselves comfortable to stay there for as long as you want to stay there, and the longer that you're there, and the more of a connection that you develop, and you create this whole present moment experience with this couple, or with the bride and her mother, or whoever you're with, that becomes engaging and rapport building and connection building. And everybody has to remember that even though we're not pot and pan salespeople and car salespeople, where you're trying to close the sale on the spot aggressively, there's never a better chance to make a sale than the first time that you meet them, because that's when you've generated the excitement, and action is usually driven by emotion.
Absolutely.
Because if they leave and they come back afterwards, it's much more done from a cerebral standpoint. So you have to capitalize on the excitement if you have the chance to do that in an elegant but convincing way.
Okay. Excellent points. All right. And for those of you that are just joining, I can see a few of you are coming in bit by bit here. I'm speaking with Brian Lawrence, and Brian is a leader in the wedding event industry, and we're talking about your online presence for your wedding business. If you haven't already done so, please post your Facebook fan page URL in the chat room so you can get some exposure and hopefully some likes. And also, we're asking, if you haven't done so, just to put in your area where you're joining us from, your state, your country, if it's outside of the U.S. Okay, and if you have questions, folks, go ahead and type them in the chat room. You know, for those of you that are here on a regular basis, you know the routine. And I do see someone has a, it looks like we've got a call, that someone has a question. But before we do that, Brian, I just wanted to see if you could tell us, I mean, what are some of the, like, what are the, what, give us top, the top three things that a wedding planner can do that's relatively easy right now for their website. What can they do to enhance the probability that someone will find them and know that they exist? Because it's one thing to give out your domain name, but what about the bride who doesn't know that you're there? What can you do to increase her chances, the chances of her finding you?
Well, there's two aspects. One is optimizing your site to be found by the public, and the other is optimizing your site to gain the best possible chance of that customer wanting, you know, calling you. So as far as visibility, one of the most beneficial strategies for a local business right now is through Google, just listing yourself with Google Maps. Essentially, Google has a responsibility to their people that are searching for them to try to deliver relevant results. And when you look on Google, there are three different ways that a business can come up. One is they can pay to come up and do what's called pay-per-click Google AdWords, where you bid on different keywords and Google can detect where a particular person is doing a search that is from and deliver ads that are programmed based on the particular advertiser that they want to come up in a particular geographic area. So if you're in Towson, Maryland, and you want to come up in a 15-mile radius, if a bride is in that radius, your ad could come up for wedding planners or bridal consultants. But if you're out of that area and you haven't paid to come up in that area, you wouldn't.
Okay.
So that's an easy way to come up, but it can be very costly, because every time somebody clicks onto your site, you can pay, and you're bidding against other businesses to come up higher. So the more that you bid, the higher you come up.
Okay.
Then there's coming up on the left-hand side organically, where you come up no matter where someone is searching for different keywords. And in most cases, if somebody is searching for wedding planner or bridal consultant, you can forget about coming up on the first page of Google for that search, because there are national interests that, like the Knot or Wedding Wire, what they're trying to do is they're trying to come up prominently for any wedding-related search on Google so they can capture the bride and then guide them to respond to their advertisers. But where the opportunity lies to come up prominently on Google for natural search is if you type in a geographical indicator. So if you type in wedding planner Towson or Baltimore or bridal consultant, then you have a better chance of ranking for those search terms organically or naturally. But there's a second way of doing that. What Google wants to do is make sure if somebody is typing in a local term in their search that they definitely get exposed to local businesses. So what they do is they index different businesses based on where they're located and what they do.
Got it.
And they'll do that automatically for most retail locations. But for many of the people in the audience, you're home-based businesses, so you're going to be invisible to Google Maps unless you initiate the contact. So you can actually develop your own profile with Google Maps, and you really do not have to have a physical address, even though it would be beneficial to do so. So you fill out a profile on Google Maps that defines the area that you cover, what you do, and then you get categorized. So if somebody does a search in your area, you have a really good chance of coming up as one of the listings on Google Maps. And then there are more things that you can do to rank your business over another. If you're in a small town, it isn't as much of a factor, but if you're competing in New York City, in Chicago, in Dallas, in Miami, then there's a good chance that there could be 10 or 15 or more competitors that are on Google Maps, and Google Maps will only display the most 7 of those listings on any search, and often it's less.
Okay.
So there are other strategies that you could implement to, you know, to rank better, and that involves registering with a number of other certification directories that Google uses to authenticate that you are in fact a local business.
There are
different criteria that Google uses to help you rank, that helps you rank on Google Maps, and that's mostly the credibility. Also, if you have a lot of reviews, that helps you rank better.
Mm-hmm.
And when it comes to ranking on Google for naturally, one of the most important criteria is the amount of incoming links that comes into your site.
Okay.
Meaning that if there's any blog, any website, any directory that links to your site, it's almost like they've casted a vote that your site is relevant.
Right.
So the more incoming links that you have compared to your competitor, the more likely that you will rank higher than them.
I interrupted, I'm sorry, Brian. So I just wanted to make sure I understand. When you're talking about Google Maps, are you referring to the same situation as Google Places? Is that an interchangeable term when you're talking
That's an interchangeable term.
Correct. Oh, okay. So basically what you're saying is if you have the brick and mortar store, if you've got the commercial space, Google is going to know that because you're listed as a business. But if you're based at home, Google has no way to do that unless you put your hand up and say, here I am. And the way to do that is to go in and register your business as part of Google Places. Is that correct?
That's exactly right.
Okay.
That's exactly.
And I think a lot of us may be hesitant to do so because we are home-based, thinking that the home address has to be part of that. But what you're saying is that's not the case at all. You can still claim your place, Google Places or Google Maps, without having to list your home address. And that way, because it makes sense, if I'm looking for something, more than likely, I'm not just going to look for Wedding Planet. I'm going to look for Wedding Planet in my area. So I see we've got Lagos, Nigeria here, New York, Ohio. So if I'm a bride in that area and I'm looking for Planet, it stands to reason that I would include that as part of my search. And if I'm the Wedding Planet in the area and I've included that, if I've claimed my listing in those areas, then what you're saying is the chances of my business coming up in the result will increase.
That's correct. And also, if you are a business, as we all are here, that goes to the location, you could actually expand your map.
So I could list all the cities that are like within a 10-mile radius of me.
Or even more.
Because
wedding planners are providing their service on site.
That's right.
It isn't that a person is coming to a store to buy merchandise.
Excellent.
You're going to a venue or a ceremony site and performing the service. So theoretically, you can cover as great an area as you're comfortable doing, and theoretically you can, if with enough searching, you can come up in a lot of areas, but your local area is normally your best bet.
Okay. That makes perfect sense. And so how does one go about doing that? How do we go about claiming our place in Google Places or Google Maps? How do we do that?
All you have to do is just go to Google, look for maps, and then there's a link right on there to add your business. First you can search for yourself, and if you are indexed, then you could claim the business as owner verified.
Mm-hmm.
There's a verification process. Like Google Maps has these different there's a profile that you fill out that helps them categorize based on different categories, like wedding planners. Some wedding planners sell invitations, so you may have invitations and announcements and other related categories. You have 5 categories that you can index yourself under. Sometimes a wedding planner might also be a party planner, so there may be a separate category for party planning. Then there's a chance for you to look to add images. There's a chance for you to add different keyword terms that best match how you feel somebody would search for you. And you could even add videos. And videos is a loose term. Videos doesn't mean that you have to actually have a physical video, but what you can do is you can turn a images into a slideshow and post it on YouTube, and then it becomes treated as a video.
Yeah.
And the advantage of doing that is that one of the ranking aspects of where Google would rank your business over another is that you have a complete profile.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the parts of completing the profile is posting a video.
The video. So videos are good, reviews are good, and being listed in other directories beyond, like Bing and Yahoo, those things sort of add credibility, right, to your business.
That's correct.
Okay.
And even beyond that, even some of the Yellow Pages type of sites.
Okay.
I do want to expand a little bit on reviews, because it's important from more than just the searchability aspect.
Okay.
If we go back to earlier years in the wedding industry, we all know that the wedding business is a tremendous word of mouth business, and a lot of wedding professionals used to get thank you cards from their brides and maybe put them in some sort of album or put them on some sort of display board and show them to brides as a way of getting their interest in seeing that and getting in enhancing their credibility. So then when the internet was born, what would happen is that sometimes either they would that people would take an excerpt from the thank you card and then post the names of the people, or they'd scan the actual thank you card and put them up. But what has changed is that those types of testimonials are no longer as strong as they used to be. And that is because everybody knows that you are only going to put favorable reviews and testimonials on your site.
Right.
But when you have objective review reporting that is on WeddingWire or The Knot or Google or Yahoo, where a bride goes there and looks at the reviews and knows that, hey, this could not be tampered with by the wedding professional.
Right.
These are totally objective.
Mm-hmm.
Sources, and you see a cluster of good reviews, that could be a strong reason for them contacting you.
Yeah.
And then getting back to Yahoo and Google, when you get found on Yahoo also has a version of Maps as well. When you get found on Google for on the map, they also list the number of reviews. So think about that when you're looking on Google and you come up with your listing with four or five other competitors, and all they're showing is your name and if you have an address and your phone number, that's all they're showing. But they're also showing the number of reviews. So if you have 20 reviews and your competition only has four or five, I would say that the majority of brides would call you first based on that credibility.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I would. I certainly would.
So it's really important to be proactive about getting reviews. So once you do a wedding, you maybe put the links to people to post reviews on some sort of printed sheet and then email them. Now, getting back to reviews on your website. Okay, so people still have reviews on their website. But
like testimonials, or like that's
testimonials,
what you're talking about, right?
But one of the things that I think is really important to point out to the audience is to try to bring those testimonials to life. So meaning that don't just say John and Mary. If you get permission from the couple, list their names, show a photograph, and also maybe equally or if not more important, put the name of the place they got married at, because the chances are a couple is going on a website and they're going to see these testimonials. They may not know the couple, but let's say they're getting married at the place that couple got married at.
That
could be just as important as the couple themselves. Just the idea, that comfort zone that you worked in that facility.
Got it.
So these are all little things. I mean, you're talking about when you're marketing yourself, you're strategizing, how am I going to create the greatest chance of that bride wanting to pick up the phone with a strong feeling about doing business with me? And there's a lot of subconscious things that go on, and one of the biggest is trust and comfort. And if that bride knows that you know the place, just the fact that you were there, that you work there, that sometimes speaks eons.
I agree. Isn't it? You know, I never thought of it that way, but that makes perfect sense. Because anybody can put up a testimonial. I mean, I can get anyone to, well, not anyone, otherwise I'd probably be much further along in my life, right? If I could just convince everyone to do what I wanted. But you're right. I mean, it isn't difficult for some. And I've been there. I've sort of looked at sites and thought, well, yeah, I wonder how real this person is. You know, Kim B in Ohio. I mean, how do I know that's for real? But a photograph.
Right. I mean, if you go to my website, localtrafficbuilder.com, and I have a link on my blog. That's client feedback. Mm-hmm. I don't just put, Brian, I loved your website. I have the name, phone, you know, website, phone number, because you have to bring these people to life. You
right.
have to make yourself transparent that you're for real.
Okay, excellent point. Excellent point. Okay, guys, for those of you who are just joining us, you're listening to Confetti, the Wedding Planning Business Talk Show, and we have Brian Lawrence, who's our guest co-host. So any questions you have with regard to your online presence, your website, Brian is an expert. He is a nationally recognized web design. He's the owner of Local Traffic Builder, which is a nationally recognized web design and marketing company that serves the wedding industry. So this is the person you need to speak to. This is the person you've got to ask your questions to. So post them in the chat or call on 626-213-5678. And I see seems like someone on the switchboard has a question, Brian, so I'm going to bring this person on the line. Your area code is 203. First digit is 5. 2035. Let's see. Hello, this is Debbie. Who's this?
Hi, this is Zara.
This is who?
This is Zara.
Zara
Fernandez at Wedding. Hi.
Well, hi, how
Hello.
Are you?
I love you, first of all.
thank you.
I came across your website like 2 months ago, and I always go back ever since.
Oh, good, thank you.
I'm so glad I was able to get on today.
Oh, wonderful. We're glad that you're here. So do you have a question for Brian?
Yes, I do. I do have a web presence out there, and I do have, like, you know, information about my business, about where I'm located. I was listening to Brian giving different ways how to make my website testimony come to life. I think that's a great idea. Is there, like, negativity when you have too much stuff on your website versus not enough?
Well, too much stuff on your website can be defined in different ways. For example,
okay.
of course, you'd love your potential customer to know so much about you. And sometimes if you have a lot of experience or you have a lot of ideas, your instinct tells you, let me show the bride everything that I can show them. But you have to
yes.
understand the experience that the bride is going through. And it's really important to that you might overwhelm her and that she might see so much content that it's just overwhelming for her to even get started. So the idea is to present what you have to say to give her just enough to make the most impact. And you could always one of the strategies that you can use on a web page is that you can show a certain amount of text and then have a little button that expands the text so you can see more. So if somebody wants to read more, they can read more. But rather than what ends up happening when you use that strategy is that even though the bride doesn't see it right away, Google sees it. So Google sees all of your content. But sometimes having a lot of content is good for search engine optimization, but it's not good for optimizing your site in the eyes of the bride because you don't want to overwhelm her.
So yes, exactly.
You just want to stay with a formula, a strategy that is getting across enough information to get the bride to pick up the phone or email you to create a response. And that's one of the things that should prevail all through the site. Number one, on every page, have your contact information. Make it easy for the bride to be able to pick up the phone or email you whenever she feels like it at that moment, that she doesn't have to search. And you could even have links on different pages that are call to action, that are inspiring her to take action. One of the other strategies, did you want to ask another question, Vera?
No. Go on. I'm just writing things down.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Sure. One of the other strategies that really works very effectively that we've done for a number of our clients is you have a contact page. The contact page typically has either just your email address, your phone number, or your address, or some wedding professionals like to use a contact us page as a lead capture. So they may have that information plus an opportunity for the bride to fill out her name, address, phone number, when she's getting married, where she's getting married, etc., with the hope that that bride will now be on her mailing list. But let's think about what's going on here. Bride's at your site, 2:00 in the morning. She really likes what she sees, and she's thinking about, well, maybe I should call them, but I'm not going to call them. They're not going to be here. What if you added a couple of fields to that contact form that allows them to make an appointment? And it doesn't have to be like something that is so sophisticated where it ties into the calendar or anything like that. It's more of getting that bride, carrying her over that psychological threshold where she feels that she made an appointment with you. So even if you just give her a choice of a couple of days and times and she fills those in, when she finishes that form and clicks send, she feels she made an appointment with you. So, and you get that form via email, and if for some reason one of those two times don't work for you, you can contact her back to change the time. But it's a totally different dynamic once she feels that she's made an appointment with you than if you're contacting her as a lead. Hopefully everybody in the audience understands the difference.
Ooh.
Yes, definitely.
That's powerful. That makes a lot of sense because it's the equivalent of saying, yeah, I want to get in contact with you. It's not me. Can I? It's more like it's push versus pull almost. I think that I've never thought of that. That makes perfect sense.
Yes. And that's we're in a society now where pull is much better.
Mm-hmm.
We want to attract. I'm a web design company and a marketing company that helps wedding professionals get traffic. But I will be the first to admit that for a wedding planner, one of the best strategies is to really try to become like a wedding industry influencer, where you're writing and speaking and posturing yourself as an expert. If you sent an article to a local newspaper that has a wedding section, if you see wedding sections that are special pullouts in a newspaper, often the articles that are in that wedding section are not written by staff writers. They're often purchased as syndicated content. So if you as a local expert contacts them and really provides an article that's educational, you have a good chance of getting published. And usually you have an opportunity to at least be the writer, Donna Lawrence, Elegant Occasions. So it just builds your credibility, and then you take that article and use it as a handout, and you build your credibility. But all things being equal, if a bride contacts you from an ad, it's not as powerful as
that's right.
Is if she contacts you because she read something about you, or you're on a blog where you found a blogger that really likes something that you did. Maybe you did a really special design for a wedding, and you send it to wedding bloggers, and they write about it, and some bride reads about you that's in your local area, really likes what you did. It's like she's contacting you with an already given respect rather than contacting you. What do you charge? Or she wants you because it's you already. And those are the type of relationships, and that's why networking is really important, that you network with people. If somebody has hired a caterer, and they trust that caterer, catering usually is the most expensive decision that the bride is going to make, and they recommend you, being recommended by somebody that they trust is a really big, it's just as important as getting recommended by a bride that you did.
And Brian, you raised such good points. I'm sitting here about to burst into flames because I just feel like I have to say I told you so, but I've just been, for as long as I can remember, I've been just, there are two things that I harp on about, being a specialist and the other one is positioning yourself as an expert. And I think a lot of us get hung up on the term expert. It doesn't mean that you know everything. It simply means that you have knowledge that the person that you're communicating with likely does not. And once you're, and most of the time, it's just a matter of you being willing to share what you know. And as soon as you do that, you are positioned, you're automatically positioned as someone who knows and as an expert. And if you're willing to share some of that information, you're not giving away the farm, but people are drawn to that because you're sharing. You know what it is that you're talking about. And what you have communicated, what you have written, proves that without you having to say, come to me, I'm the best wedding planner, or let me plan your wedding. They're just attracted to you. I think that just makes perfect sense. And it's not very hard to do.
Very well put. And also, it's also a really transformational experience. You have a number of wedding professionals that have the same amount of experience. But one of those wedding professionals steps up to the plate, she writes and she speaks. Besides that enhanced credibility and reputability, when you write or you speak about the subject, it just sharpens the way that you communicate it, and it just helps you become that much more creative and powerful in the whole sales and marketing process.
Absolutely. Does that help? Does that help you?
Yes. Let me do.
Okay.
Also, Debbie, I know that we're not going to have enough time to answer all questions, or if questions come up, so maybe you could post my email address, which is BrianLawrence@localtrafficbuilder.com.
Yeah, absolutely. I just posted your website, but before I do that, Sarah, right? Spell your name for me, please.
Vera
with a Z, like Victor.
Like Vera Wang.
Yeah, Vera. Brian was saying it. I'm saying he's saying it wrong because I always want to point the finger. Debbie, you're saying it wrong. Okay, it's Vera. Thank you, Vera. Did you have any other questions or comments for us?
Actually, not today. I want to give everyone else a chance, but thank you so much for answering me.
Sure, my pleasure.
Okay. Thank you for listening, Vera, and thank you for participating. I'm going to mute the line, but please continue to join us, okay?
Yes.
All right, fantastic. All right, thank you. So it's Brian Lawrence, right?
At localtrafficbuilder.com.
Okay, so folks, I posted Brian's website, Local Traffic Builder. So his website is, email, as he says, is BrianLawrence@localtrafficbuilder.com. I'm not multitasking very well. I posted it on in the chat, but I will post it again in the show notes for this episode. One of the questions that someone has in the chat, Brian, Josette says she's not seeing her country on Google Maps. What should she do? I think Josette's in the Caribbean, right? Where are you? Josette is, I thought, yeah, she's in St. John's in Antigua in the Caribbean. What do you suggest?
It may be that Google Maps isn't established there. So then in that case, the best bet would be to work on getting found through organic search, which is developing links, having content on your site that includes keywords that match how somebody would search for you. One of the best search engine optimization strategies for a local wedding professional is, if you don't have a blog that's built on your site, to do that. Because every time that one of the ways that helps your site gets ranked better is by updating your site frequently, so that Google goes back to see what new things are on your site more frequently. And by having a blog, you do that naturally. And also, one of the types of content that Google favors in delivering results for is educational content, and blogs tend to be perceived as a vehicle for education rather than commercializing the business.
That's right. It's almost like I think of a blog as sort of like a diary of sorts, that it's just like a conversation that you're having. You just imagine if you had a chance to sit down with your client and just sort of brainstorm and talk about some different things that may not be directly related to your services. But I mean, indirectly, there is the relationship. But if you think of a blog in that way, it's not as scary. It's not as frightening. You just sort of, it's you. Because planning weddings is such a personal service. And I think somebody has to buy into you. They have to get you. Because if they don't get you, if the bride doesn't get you, my experience is you're not going anyplace. You're not moving forward. She has to really believe you and trust you and like you. And if that connection isn't there, moving forward is going to be very difficult, if not impossible. And I think a blog is a great way to share.
And also a blog is a great way to help expand your network. If you've done a special wedding that contains something different, or was it a really beautiful place, and you do a blog post about the wedding that you did, and then tell the bride that you did it, the chances are she's going to be very flattered, and then she's going to tell her friends, and maybe send the link over to her friends, and also at the same time you'd post it on Facebook, and it's a very nice way to expand your exposure to your clients, friends, and family. It's a very organic, natural way to do that. It works out really nicely. And I do want to say something about social media, because it's a very new field. There's nobody that's going to say, "Well, I have 25 years experience in social media and I know more than somebody else." In a lot of cases, it's really people that are younger generation that are better than all of us at it. But in general, there are a couple of things that I want to say to give perspective. We have to realize that most of us as local wedding professionals, if they have a website, you're not getting a tremendous amount of traffic to your site, especially relative to Starbucks coffee or these communities that have thousands and millions of visitors, where every day they need to put something new to keep people happy. If you have strong Facebook posts and strong blog posts, you don't need to do it every week or even every day. The idea is to let the strength of what you've written see it get exposed for a while. Let a number of eyeballs see it before it gets lowered to, you know, in favor of the new post. Mm-hmm. The important thing is that when somebody comes to your site, someone comes to your blog, someone comes to your Facebook page, that they don't see that your last post was in September, that at least it was done in the last 3 or 4 weeks, and then it seemed current. And that even though it seems like social media doesn't cost anything, your time is worth something, and you have to, in everybody's mind, think about what's the best use of your time for the purpose of building your business. And I think there's a fine line to walk in thinking about that, and also spending hours at night when you should be resting, working on social media. It's very important to look at balance. And a lot of times social media is taken over the amount of time that people spend to do other productive things that sometimes are like rest or exercise, which allows you to go back to work and put more quality into what you do, as opposed to being burnt out by spending so much time sitting on a computer.
There you go. Like maybe she'd be going out and meeting some vendors.
Right, exactly. Networking is still, there's a lot of 20th century marketing ideas that still work, and people are losing sight of what still works and what will continue to work forever because they want to grab onto what's new and hot.
Right.
And what's new and hot doesn't always bring more customers to you.
Right. And, you know, I'm sitting here and I'm just sort of saying, oh, thank goodness, because you guys know how pitiful. I believe in the strength of social media. I'm not very active on Facebook. Twitter just seems so crowded to me. Twitter just seems to be like, if you don't get caught, you know, someone doesn't see it within the first, you know, 15 to 30 minutes, it's sort of like buried because it's just so much going on. But that's maybe part of my ignorance, but I get it. I just haven't bought into it.
Brides don't like Twitter, according to a study. That it's really not the greatest thing. My associate Alan Berg, who's a very well known speaker and author, speaks all over the country. Was at an event in Atlanta, Georgia. It was a bridal show and a wedding industry event, and they did a survey of brides. Of what their likes and dislikes, and it was a resounding dislike of Twitter.
So I just thought
I'd share that with the audience.
Okay, that's interesting. Very interesting. I think more of us within the industry are more have bought onto Twitter. I mean, it's great for making connections.
It's a B2B thing. Yeah, exactly.
Not so much for the consumer.
Also is a great B2B thing. You know, to network with other wedding professionals, to find out information, from wedding industry suppliers, but it's definitely not a vehicle to promote your business direct to the bride.
To the consumer, yeah. Good point. Brian, somebody asked in the chat, what do you think with regard to putting prices on your wedding planning business website? I know you were talking with Vera, when you were talking with Vera, you talked about not putting too much information, but should we be listing our prices?
I really think that I think that you can't avoid the issue. Everybody has an idea, wants to know something about pricing. So just ignoring the fact that people are going to be curious about it could hurt your response. I think that it really depends on how you're positioned. If you are positioned to really want to serve a budget bride and price is a benefit that where you're demonstrating that you're very reasonable, then I think that pricing and packaging is a good strategy. But for those that are really looking to attract a more upscale bride, that where what you want to do is you may want to give them a range. You may want to say that what we do is highly custom. It's not that we don't want to give you a price, but we just need to get to know more about you before we do that, that we don't package our things.
Right. And this.
But you can't ignore it. You can't just because what's going to happen is that if it's okay, as long as you tell them that okay, you're not going to find pricing on this site, but you and that you invite them to take a step in order to get the price, and that normally could be as much as speaking to you on the phone, or in some cases you won't give a price unless you meet with them.
Right.
But the idea is to not ignore the.
Brian, are you there? You're not going to get the pricing. Okay. I'm a fan of using the range and saying, I have packages as low as, but you raise a good point, because I think as soon as you start listing your prices, then you're competing on price. And if what you do is highly customized, as I believe, wedding planning is, because no two weddings are the same. It's not like you're providing a DJ service or something like that. It's based on the situation for your prospects and hopefully clients. So by indicating a range, or again, your style should speak to the bride, because usually it's the bride that begins this process, but you want this person to get in contact with you because they do buy into you. And I've used this analogy before. Sometimes you go in there, you go to a place, and I think I'm not spending more than $100 on this widget right here. But then I get in there and I speak to the person, and they share the value of what they're doing and what they do, and I get it, and I can see, what I had in mind doesn't really match with what I wanted. And based on that discussion I have with that person, I may leave out of there spending double, triple more than what I had planned to, but I get it. I get the value. Whereas if they had just simply told me right up front, it's $300, I might have just skipped over it, because that's just not something that I get. But if what you're providing is a customized service, then your client needs to get that, and you need to build that up into the process when they meet with you. But you can't do that. I don't believe you can do it effectively on your website. And I think you may, turn some people away that potentially might have been a really good match for what you offer and for what you provide.
Right. One of the things that you want to try to do is quench the thirst for differentiation. and take them away from even thinking about the pricing by exciting them so much about how special you're going to make their wedding.
It's like, oh my gosh, I've got to do business with this person. Yes. This is the person that we need for our wedding. That's the kind of reaction you want. Another point that comes up when we're talking about websites is, I mean, the instinct is we set up our business, we come up with a great business name, and then we try to reserve a domain name, myweddingbusiness.com, as our online presence. What suggestions do you have when it comes to selecting or using a domain name with your wedding planning business website, Brian?
I think that it's certainly every wedding professional should have a domain name that matches the name of their business, because you're protecting your brand that way. But if your business name doesn't really tell people what you do, then it's really important for you to consider getting a more generic term domain name. Like, for example, if you're a wedding planner in Manhattan, and the name of your business was Enchanted Moments, that may be a wedding business in the minds of some people, but if they saw your domain name as weddingplannermanhattan.com, that would be very clear, not only what you do but where you do it, and also in any type of marketing that you do, it would also stand out.
So what do? You use one? You use them both, or how do you make that work?
Well, if businesses that have been in existence for a long time, and they have a domain name that doesn't tell people anything about their name, I would not launch a site with a new domain name. I would, even if you're going to redo your site, I would keep that old domain name, because the age of a domain name is a factor in how Google ranks you. But what you can do is you can get that type of generic term domain name and just point it to the site. So it's almost as if in the old days you would get, if you were a limousine company, you may get a phone number for each county that you're in, so that it appears to the customer that you're local to them. And sometimes you get a phone number for tracking purposes, and that's another good use of using different domain names. It's very difficult if you do marketing to really know how people came to your website if they don't click from a source.
Right.
If somebody types in your domain name, there's no way of knowing.
Right.
So if you have a domain name that's specific to marketing, then at least you know that that's the only way they found out about your domain name. What you can do is you can have like landing pages. Like, for example, if you advertise on The Knot, or you advertise on Wedding Wire or Wed Alert or Wedding Zone, and you have a domain name and you build landing pages, xyz.com/The Knot/WeddingWire/WeddingZone/WedAlert. And so if somebody goes to that domain name from a link on your advertisement on those wedding websites, you know for sure that site drove that customer to you. And one of the key things in all types of marketing is that you don't want your advertising dollars to be a crapshoot. You want to play chess. You want to know exactly what you're doing.
That's right. And this past week, for Wedding Business Guide members, I did a call-in day where people could just call in and speak one-on-one. And one of our members was concerned that her ad on the Wedding Wire, she didn't believe she was getting enough traction from that. And I asked her, well, how do you know? Is there a way for you to measure? And the suggestion, and for those of you that don't know, a landing page, and Brian will correct me if I'm wrong, is a page where you want someone to, it's just usually just one page, and you're getting someone to take action. Either they're going to call the number that's on that landing page, or they're going to complete a form where they include their email and their contact information. But there's not a whole lot more going on than that. So it sounds like what Brian is suggesting is you create a site, maybe just a one-page site, a very simple site, but the domain name that's attached to that site is the only time you would use it. So let's use xyzweddings.com/WeddingWire. That would be the domain name that you list in your Wedding Wire ad. So you know that if somebody calls you based on or fills in that form on that landing page, the only place that they would have done, the only reason they would have done that is by finding you from that ad that you've placed in the Wedding Wire, nowhere else. And that is how you can track to see how effective that ad is. So if you get 5 calls this week and you know they came from that landing page, then you know then that ad is driving some traffic to your business. Whereas if you send them to your main web page, your main website for your business, you wouldn't know that unless you make it your business to ask. And supposing they don't take action, so is that correct, Brian? Is that sort of
the yes. And as far as the landing page, a landing page is simply a page that you have a particular purpose for using.
Okay.
And
so for one thing too,
some of the ingredients that you discussed are good things to have on a landing page, and It could be a mini website. It could be more than it's just a place where someone lands for a particular purpose, as opposed to just going to the general homepage.
Ah, okay. And this is a good thing if you do decide to go with Google AdWords, where you're paying for those clicks. It would be good to have a special landing page for Google AdWords, because it's usually when someone's clicking on something like that, they're looking for something very specific. So imagine how frustrating it would be if, let's just say, your Google AdWords was to talk about, I don't know, your wedding invitations, and then they land on your main page and they have to sort of search for that part about wedding invitations. I mean, maybe that's not the best example, but
it's a perfect example.
Okay, so then, so it needs to be specific to what it is that you want that person to be drawn to attract it to. So if you are advertising,
because it's a short cut to conversion. If somebody is looking for someone, when somebody, especially if they're searching on Google or Yahoo, they're like finger walking like you used to do in the Yellow Pages. Moving very quickly, so you really need to get their attention very quickly.
Yeah, it's like you have to zone in and sort of just target what it is that they're looking for. So Kim, I don't know if that asks your question. Kim's asking in the chat, how and where do you use a landing page? So that's one example. What other example? I mean, give us some examples, Brian, as to when you might use a landing page for your wedding planning business.
Well, I think we actually covered some of the main points. Mm-hmm. One is, say you are a business that does multiple types of events, and you're doing and your homepage shows you more as an event planner, and you have an ad on Wedding Wire than not. Certainly, you'd rather drive them to a page that talks strictly about weddings.
Oh, there you go.
And one of the strategies that, going back to you doing a landing page specifically for an ad, is say you have an ad in the Knot, and then somebody clicks on to the Knot, why not even have an acknowledgement saying, hello, Knot Bride.
Mm.
Hi.
Okay.
Just because of our relationship with the Knot, we're going to make a special offer specifically for Knot Brides.
Ah.
So what you're doing is you're fostering the connection that bride had in the Knot community and bringing it forward to your website, so there's not a total disconnect away from a Knot, the source they trust.
Okay. All right. What do they call it? Isn't that the term? Knotties? Is that the term? With brides, with people that are on the Knot? I may be off on that. So, yeah, maybe that's, you know, how you welcome them. And it's very specific. I like that a lot, Brian. And for those of you that are sort of that are doing the wedding, who are exhibiting at a bridal show, maybe a special landing page for those brides. So, you know, that sort of speaks to, you know, thank you for visiting the site. I hope you enjoyed the bridal show. That would be pretty neat, because it's directed.
And that's a really important point that you're making, Debbie, is that at a bridal show, there, no matter what type of connection that you make with a bride at a bridal show, you have to realize the truth of what's going on. A bride is experiencing sensory overload. A lot of things are going on, and no matter how friendly and cordial and the type of connection that you make at the show, the chances are the shelf life of that rapport does not last beyond the show.
Wow.
So, and also there's all different time frames that a bride is willing to take action on the type of service that you provide. So follow-up is key.
Hmm.
And doing doing consistent and tasteful emails that to follow up after the show, and driving them to a special landing page is a great idea.
Yeah. So I just thought of that on the spot. Look at that. But it makes, you're right, because there's so much going on at the bridal show. A lot of times they're just sort of trying to gather as much loot as they can for that bag that they've got in their hand. So if you can sort of step up and catch them in the moment right after, sort of striking while the iron is hot, I think you'd be in a good place. Before they completely forget. Okay, so I know we've just gone over the hour, but I did set aside an hour and a half. And Brian, I hope that's okay. We're going to wrap it up soon. But this has been very, very interesting and so helpful. We touched on social media, and I kind of wanted to jump back on. So Facebook, I know, is making some changes. Twitter, we say, you've told us, you've shared with us, is not very popular with brides. So what can we do on our Facebook pages, on our Facebook fan page? What kind of things should we be doing?
Well, what's happening, and this was like a real surprise that Facebook sprang upon the community just like in the last week and a half, is that they're changing the Facebook format to mandatory, it's called Timeline, and it's just a different. It's a nice presentation of a Facebook page where it has a lot of different sections that people could see, but it hampers the business effectiveness that has been set up with Facebook welcome pages. With a Facebook welcome page, for the last couple of years, you can build an aesthetic page that a customer would see if they haven't liked your page yet for the first time as an incentive for them to like the page. And now that welcome page still exists, but it isn't the first thing somebody sees. It's actually
sort of
under
buried.
A tab.
Yeah.
It's buried. So it really takes away from the effectiveness of the that welcome page. But the key thing is to really use there's a wide image that you can put on that Facebook page, make that really elegant, make that really striking, turn it into the whole Facebook page as aesthetic as possible, a presentation of your business. Try to make it look like a company Facebook page rather than it just looking like a regular Facebook page. That's a really key thing.
Which is what mine looks like. As I mumble and shuffle my feet. Yeah, so that change came out fairly recently, and I think at the end of the month it's mandatory, right? I think
that's
sort of
correct.
Yeah, so, guys, I'm not on Facebook as I should, but I'm sort of, I know what's going on. Biggest hypocrite when it comes to Facebook. But, it's sort of changed everything. So whereas before you could almost improve your likes by getting people to say, yeah, I like your page, and then giving them some kind of reward. That can still sort of happen, but it's just not in the forefront anymore. So the likelihood of someone doing so is just changed dramatically. So change is constant. But Brian and I were talking prior to the show. So by the sounds of things, it's not really being met well with the reception hasn't been great for a lot of businesses.
No, a lot of businesses are really unhappy with it because in the last year, they've had Facebook pages, welcome pages built. There were companies that went into business to do Facebook pages.
Yeah.
So there are businesses that allow you to develop your own Facebook company page on the fly yourself. There's just a lot of business models that were impacted by this change, as well as the actual businesses.
Wow. Oh, and Daniel brings up a good point that you can private message on your business site, so you couldn't do that before. So that's good. Yeah, I noticed. So that means you can sort of communicate without the whole world seeing what it is that you have to say, that you're discussing. So that's, I guess that's a plus there. Good point,
yes.
Daniel.
Yes.
Okay, so let's see. So I think we've covered quite a few things here. So just to recap, Brian suggests that you claim your Google Places listing or Google Maps listing, even if you are home-based and you do not have clients prospects coming to your home, you should still claim your Google Places, so that increases your chances that when someone's searching for your services locally, which is what most of us are doing, we provide a local service, that you will be found. Also, utilizing reviews and photos and video is a really, Google rewards you for that. I believe YouTube is owned by Google, so I believe they're the second most popular search engine. So if you're searching for something, Google is going to, you know, it's a good chance it's going to be YouTube is going to rear its head. So
It doesn't have to be an actual video. It could be an image slideshow.
It doesn't have to be talking head. It doesn't have to be you in front of the camera. So as Brian says, you can, you know, do a slideshow if you're camera shy. But that will definitely help you. And also, Brian, reviews in Wedding Wire and things like that, does Google pick that up? Does that count?
It doesn't count separately for your own ranking.
Oh, okay.
But it certainly counts on Wedding Wire, because if Wedding Wire displays the amount of reviews in your profile, so mm-hmm. similar to the way Google Places and Yahoo does, if when you see a business that has more reviews than another, it attracts your attention, especially if it's considerably more.
Absolutely. Another great point that Brian made is that, do you want to get brides to make an appointment when they come to your website? And what I thought was a fantastic tip, just to getting the bride to take action by giving her some options when she gets to your contact page, that she can choose a date and a time. And just the psychology of her taking that action to do so, solidifies that she has an appointment with you. Don't worry about am I going to be available for the time slot that she selected? That just gives you the opportunity to connect with her. And she's actually made that move. She has actually reached out to you and said, I want to speak with you. And that's very powerful. Landing pages for specific parts of your business. So if you are someone that offers wedding planning and event planning and invitations and you do design, instead of an answer for you is to have sort of like mini sites for each of those areas, so that you can target the people that are looking for maybe just design, and maybe they don't want to know about or not interested in the other stuff that you provide. But by having a mini site, instead of overwhelming someone with everything on your main site, I mean, you can still allude to those things, but you can focus by having a mini site. Think of it like, having the corporate office and all these little chains for your business. So that's a really great way. And it's a great way to track, how effective, if you're doing marketing on places like Wedding Wire, and directing people to specific landing pages. That's what I'm talking about, like a mini website, which is what a landing page is. That's a really great way to just move different, to get focus on different areas of your business. And then Facebook, as Brian indicated, there are some changes coming along the way, but I guess we have to embrace that change until we hear otherwise, and just making your Facebook page as aesthetically pleasing as possible is good for you, and that stands to reason in our industry, because that's, the looks really do count, and that's what can make the difference in someone communicating with you. But Brian also brought up a very good point that, you don't want to labor over social media night and day to the point where it's sort of just consuming you. There are other things that you can and should be doing to market your business. And I'm a big advocate of making friends with your local wedding vendors. You can't plan a wedding by yourself. I'm sorry, you can't do it. You need vendors, and vendors spending that time. And that's just one example. But you need to spend time meeting people. You cannot operate your wedding business by sitting at home or sitting in your office. You've got to go out there and network and meet with people, because your vendors will be one of the biggest sources of referrals for you. If they believe in what you're doing and can see that you're a professional and know what you're talking about, they'll send business your way, because you're going to make their life easier. Caterers especially. Because if the bride goes to the caterer and she doesn't have a wedding planner, guess who the default wedding planner usually turns out to be? It's the caterer. So if you can get in, if you can prove yourself and network with folks in your area, especially caterers, they will send business your way. Okay, that doesn't really tie in directly with websites, but it's just sort of, talking about the social media aspect, not to get too hung up on that. Okay, Brian, you've shared a lot of great information with us. What should folks do to get in contact with you? What can you help our listeners with?
Well, essentially, we're a web design, web enhancement, helping you get found on Google, helping you with social media, consulting. One of the things that, because of my length of time and experience in the wedding industry, I'm able to really sit down with a business one-to-one and intuitively have answers to really help their business, and I've done that a number of times. Because the wedding business is something that you can't go to school to learn. It's really experiential, especially the marketing and really and the sales. So just having someone that has worked so long in the industry, and I've had the opportunity to speak to so many wedding professionals in the 15 years that I was the vice president of sales and marketing for a national invitation brand, my strategy was always not to help them sell more invitations. What could I do? What ideas can I share to help individuals better their business? And when you have that willingness to give without hesitation, it comes back to you. So I would get a lot of feedback from businesses all over the country on what works for them, and that's sort of the platform that I'm taking here tonight, is that I'm just trying to share things that I think are meaningful.
Absolutely. And thank you for that. I see a question here, which is a very good question. Thank you, Martha. Martha asks, how much does it cost to set up a website? What kind of idea? What price range are we talking about?
Well, that would probably fall into the category of, well, everything is customized and you'd have to talk to me about it. I'd address the price. No, I'm just kidding. we do have on our website our website starts at $2,500. Most of our websites fall in the range of $4,000.
Okay.
But we're building futures here,
mm-hmm.
and you have to look at the reality of the situation is that whatever investment you're making in a website is the other alternative. If you don't have a strong website, how much business are you losing each month by not having one?
Right. Good point. So, you know, can you build a website on your own? Absolutely, you could. Is it going to look the way that you envision? Maybe, possibly not, but depends on your skill set. Could you find a company to do it for less? Oh, without a doubt. But again, you have to understand what is it that the wedding industry is its sort of own kind of special beast. So,
and also, it's the same logic that you're in the, you're wedding planners and you want a bride to hire you for your talent, and that they're never going to do by themselves what you can do for them. It's the same logic.
Right. That's right.
That we could make a real impact on the future of a business.
Okay.
Plus we have the expertise, so it isn't as if you're hiring a generic firm, it's almost like they have to pick your brain in order
to understand,
learn the business.
Yeah.
But we're almost like a marketing partner. It's almost like we're building a site for ourselves.
Okay. All right. And for more information, folks, we'll go to localtrafficbuilder.com, right?
That's correct.
Okay, wonderful. Let's see.
And also, for any questions, if there wasn't a particular question that was answered in as in-depth fashion, I'd be happy to answer the question individually.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you. And Brian's email, I did post it. I'll post it again. It's Brian Lawrence at localtrafficbuilder.com. But it will be, I'll put it with the show notes once the show's over. Just two other quick points. Daniel's referencing PageMoto. They are timeline ready. So I guess PageMoto.com will create your Facebook. Is it a tool or a company that creates your Facebook fan page? And
yes.
Okay, great. Thank you. And let's see. Someone asked the question. Heather. Heather asks, how often should she submit her site to the search engines?
It's really a matter of how often you update your site for the search engines.
Okay. So they'll come to you if you're doing that?
It's essentially, search engines establish an automated pattern of how frequently they come to look at your site for updates based on how frequently you do it.
Ah, okay.
So once you start doing it frequently, and as I said, the blog is probably the best way, and if you blog you know, one or two times a month, that's an ample amount of time for the search engines to come back and re-index your site.
Oh, so sort of like they're making the rounds.
But then again, there's no harm in submitting your information again to a search engine on an annual basis.
Ah, okay. Okay. So sort of like they make the rounds and sort of like, let's see if there's anything new here. Oh, great, new information. That's a good thing. That's sort of how my very elementary description there. But
sometimes that's true. That's exactly the case.
Yeah. So if you're updating your information on a regular basis in a blog, you know, having a blog is a great way to do that. WordPress, guys, is a great platform. WordPress was designed for blogs, but you can use WordPress to build a website, you know, with pages that, you know, functions as a website and not be a blog. A little more in-depth than, you know, what we have time for today, but it can be done. Again, you're going to invest either some time or you're going to invest money, and you want to decide which way you want to go. So if you want to get a website up and you want it to look fantastic and it works with our industry, then, you know, paying for someone who's well-versed in that area to do that makes sense. If the funds are not there, but you need a web, you know, an online web presence, you can do that yourself. You're going to need to, you know, there are going to be some pointers that you'll have to understand, but you're trading one thing for another. So only you, you know, you're the best judge and can make that decision.
Right. Okay. In that case, there can be some consulting available on the direction of the site.
Ah, okay. So you offer, that's a service that you offer.
Correct.
Also.
Correct.
Consulting. So, you know, please don't be, you know, contact Brian. Check out the website, localtrafficbuilder.com. And as you can tell, Brian is very knowledgeable and willing to share. So I urge you to reach out. He is speaking in October. At the Wedding MBA, which I actually think I'm going to attend, Brian.
Okay.
So you'll get a chance to meet him face to face and hear what it is. Hear some more about what he knows. And Brian, you're on Twitter. What's your Twitter handle? Tell us what is it?
I just remember my personal one, which is Wedding Wise Guy.
That's your personal one? Oh, I thought that was.
I think it's Wed Biz Ideas.
Wed Biz Ideas. Okay.
Yes.
Well, go to localtrafficbuilder.com is a good starting point, and then you can figure out the balance from there. Okay, well, thank you so much, everyone. Thank you, Brian. You've been a wealth of information and very, very helpful and help answer some questions, a lot of questions that we have out there. Again, please feel free to reach out to Brian with specifics or any questions that we weren't able to cover tonight. I want to thank you for listening. Please remember to follow the show on blogtalkradio.com/confetti. Our next live show airs on Tuesday, March 20th at 7 p.m. U.S. Eastern. And Kylie Carlson of the Wedding and Event Institute will be our guest co-host. So please join me then. Again, thank you so much for taking the time to be a part of Confetti, the Wedding Planning Business Talk Show. Go out there and make lots of money. And as always, love and success. Thank you, Brian. Thank you, everyone. Take care.
Thank you, everybody, also. I enjoyed it.
Thanks, Brian.